I was just curious.
There's a lot to keep track of.
Hello, everyone. We're going to open the Joint Ways and Means Committee Subcommittee on Natural Resources for March 6, 2017. Everyone's trying to get their bills through in other committees as well, so people will be moving in and out. Expect that. But we will start off with somewhere where we ended on Thursday, which was Kathy Connolly. Is she here? There she is. if you can give us your report, that would be helpful. And then we are going to have going to have public testimony regarding the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. And so I'm going to open the public hearing on HB 5011. And Kathy Connolly, if you would do us.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, I'm Kathy Connolly with DAS Chief Financial Office, and I'm joined with Director Brad Avey from the DOGAMI and Kim Riddell, their Chief Financial Officer. The governor's budget for DOGAMI, The governor's budget for DOGAMI invests in and makes permanent the state's investments in mapping natural hazards that impact Oregonian and providing technology resources to protect and expand the availability of that data. This agency has a number of emerging issues. Continuation really is the volatility of their funding, an issue that has really come to the forefront in this biennium and in the next biennium is the size and complexity of the data stored and made available to state agencies and all Oregonians by this agency. And they'll continue to be educating communities on resilience strategies for natural resources. This is a short expenditure history. You've seen a similar one for all the agencies. 15-17 was really a reset biennium for this agency, and the goal was to reset the staff levels and the funding levels to make sure that they were really best serving the mission for this agency. But it does show that there was general fund investment even in difficult times. And the reason that general fund investment in this agency makes sense long term is it allows it to leverage federal funds and other funds. It gives the state a little more control over the location of data being collected and analyzed, and again, the investment in IT. This is the slide that shows you what they buy with their budget, and it's kind of unusual for a natural resource agency. About half of it is personal services, and half of it is supplies and services. That's a really large supplies and services. But I think Ms. Riddell pointed out that professional services for this agency is actually about 31% of their budget, and that's actually their LIDAR and their mapping activity. So that's why it's kind of out of kilter. This is their revenue history. Again, it shows that there's been a steady increasing investment of general fund. There's also an increase in federal funds. That is a little more volatile. It depends on what is available. Although some of the increases is really the change in how they budgeted their federal funds. They used to budget some of them as other funds because they were contractual. Now, if it comes from a federal agency, it's all federal funds. So some of that increase is shown there. Another increase in their other funds, they are. Some of the increase shows that fee increase that the agency discussed with you last week. That is only a small part of it, but in fact, for the MLRR program, they're only about 37% of that orange other funded area. Investments in the governor's budget. This governor's budget was really about making permanent investments that the legislature had made in earlier sessions. So package 101 is about making permanent those LIDAR staff. It really leverages a ton of federal funds, where I think it's about 130,000 or so of general fund, and we bring in about 800,000 of federal funds. These people have been LDs for five biennia or so, four biennia, and now we're making them permanent. Package 102 makes permanent an IT position that was an LD in the February session that the legislature approved. So now we're making that position permanent, and we're funding it with other funds. So that may be a little bit of a challenge, but the agency believes that they will be able to do that. Other changes, we did statewide adjustments, as we did with all of them. And then I did want to note that the governor's budget chose not to reduce general fund for this agency, as it did with most other natural resource agencies. And with that, unless there are questions, I don't have anything more to add.
Subcommittee members? Not seeing anything?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Did we open with the public testimony?
Yeah. Yep. So we're ready to go with.
Okay. With that, like to open it up for public testimony and call forward, please, Rich Angstrom. Good afternoon, and welcome to our subcommittee.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here. Quite a day. I got up this morning and we had like 4 inches of snow out on top of the hill above here. So I actually had my work boots on. The only way I was not putting on the Alan Edmond shoes today and try to wade through the snow to get here. My name's Rich Angstrom. I'm the president of the Oregon Concrete Aggregate Producers Association. I'm also here representing the Oregon Mining Association. Dave Honeycutt couldn't be here. He lives in Hillsboro and on top of a big mountain himself, and thought it wise not to come down the mountain today. So I'm going to give testimony from both perspectives. I did want to first initially just tell you, one of the interesting things about OCAPA is we get to see the transition that's been happening with this agency over the last couple of years, with a budget crisis from the year before, trying to run a fee bill. We got the fee bill through in 2015 that hopefully will have stabilized the MLR program. I think it's been going pretty well. We also get to see what's going on with staff changes and morale and how permits and things of that nature are getting issued. So it's important, I think, that an industry that's fully engaged with an agency come in once in a while and let the legislators know how things are looking from the perspective of the mining community. And one of the things I would like to just point out is there's been some interesting changes that not only to stabilize the funding side of the MLR program, but also just substantively within the program itself. One of the measures that this legislature and the folks that have been on this committee a lot have heard is that the department used to spend most of their time in here talking about the number of site visits. And they were real proud of the fact that every site got a visit every year. But there was a downside to that, because when you think about where all the mines are across the state, it means the staff that's stationed in Albany is running all over the state trying to visit a site every year, and there's 800 or 900 of them, right? And so it may not have been the most productive use of the time, though I think from a measure of just the site inspections, the legislature in the past has liked to see that. One of the things we're really pleased about is that the number of site visits are going to be reduced, but the backlog on permitting and things that are sitting on different staff's desks are now a priority to get off their desks and get them processed and out the door. We think that's a good thing. For sure, most of the complaints that come in from the industry anyway, towards the industry, we do get complaints that we get engaged ourselves, even from OCAPA side, trying to make sure folks comply with state and federal law. Those inspections those violations or those problems are usually community driven anyway. And so whenever there's an issue, a blasting issue or something like that, it's the community that calls and says, hey, they're outside of their permit conditions. And so it may not be things that they see when they're out doing their site inspections. We think this is a good change. It's a more efficient change. And I think they internally think that, and we want to applaud the agency for doing that. We think the fee bill has done a good job of stabilizing the funding. I understand they have some, and LFO will know this, some $300,000 now built up just literally from 2016 in, as a cushion. Of course, they're holding a couple of positions open that we hope that they fill. So we'll see how that goes. But one of the things I've been working on in my back of my office is a graph of where the production has gone for the department. And literally through the 2000s, it was 42 million tons to 52 million tons of material. In 2006, 2007, my memory is not exactly right on the date, we saw a great big drop in production all the way down to 27, and now we're somewhere between 34 and 36. We're still a third down in aggregate production from a statewide perspective. And when you think about that, 60% of that aggregate is used for infrastructure purposes. Yeah. It's a big part of the expense. In fact, ODOT did a study back in early 2000, 98 to 2000 timeframe, and what they found is about 52 or 56% of the cost of a highway project is attributed to aggregate and the aggregate products alone. So it's a big part of the cost for road building. So with all of this being said, we think the agency is really doing a good job. It's definitely a different management. You know, it's a little more science-based management versus an agency that was a little more regulatory in its nature and experience. And some of that has some challenges. You know, scientists are very careful about details, and the department's done a good job of holding me to task on the details too, but that's, you know, the focus that you will see, and I've appreciated it, by the way, so the agency knows that. The one thing I do think is that from a budget side of things is OCAPA is still concerned, as we've agreed and we have historically agreed, to pay for the full cost of the MLR program. However, the overhead issue is the one thing that my board has me very tasked to follow up on. And we don't mind paying for the Albany office. We don't mind paying for the assistant director's time. But we have a policy for OCAPA that we think that all agency heads, not just the MLRR, DOGAMI's director, but all agency heads should be paid out of the general fund. Ultimately, on contested cases and things like that, the agency head gets to make that decision, the decision on an application, if it's contested. And we think that that agency head on a regulatory agency responsible for making a final decision for or against a mine site should be neutral from anybody saying that, you know, the industry pays for that position to make that person to make that decision. So it's been our position that on the overhead piece that we don't believe we should be responsible from an industry side for the overhead costs for the director himself or the director's office. The rest of it we're pretty comfortable with, and we'll be asking for more detail on how those overhead fees, if nothing from a lobbyist perspective, just to keep my people at ease that the agency's minding their pennies well, which has frankly been a problem in the past, so they have at least me on high alert, at least for a while still. The other thing I would like to say is, and from the Oregon Mining Association side of things, this committee supported House Bill 3089 in 2015, and that bill started set a very more pro-mining policy in the state, declared mining a natural resource in the state. Some of you were actually even sponsors of that bill. And asked the department to start doing the mineral inventory of the existing mineral resources in the state. And one of the things you may not know is before World War II, Oregon had one of the most robust mining communities in the country. And there was mines and minerals being taken everywhere. In World War II, that stopped because the government said no more mining of non-essential minerals. And so all the gold and silver and all those kinds of things went away and never has really bounced back. And as we start talking more about this department's role in economic development in rural Oregon, the one key piece that OMA really strongly believes that's not utilized is the mineral resources in our rural community. And I've challenged the House Ag Committee on this issue, that if we're going to be serious about rural development, and you look at ag and ranching as the main sources in most of rural Oregon, there's only one other opportunity. We're not getting Google out there. We're not getting Intel out in Malheur County. It's not going to happen. But we do have, and it has been identified, if those of you sitting on the House Ag Committee were privileged to hear Dogami present the mineral inventory report during the interim. And on top of that, USGS came out with another report that was dealt with the sage-grouse. So they were looking at the mineral potential of eastern Oregon at the same time. And both of them came to the same conclusion that there's significant minerals in our rural parts of our state that aren't being utilized, and they're there. And if we're going to create jobs, these are family wage jobs. This is not, these mine sites employ thousands of people. They're family wage jobs. They contribute to the community in significant ways. It's not like some of the other mining interests that the state's grappling with right now. These are real jobs and have great potential to help pull the rural parts of the state out of the brink. With that, there's a policy option package 106 that did not make it into the governor's cut, but we think it's extremely important to continue that effort of the department of looking at the mineral resources statewide and setting the stage for some of the big mining companies to have an easier route to find minerals that might be available and to start promoting job growth in the state of Oregon. It doesn't change any standards. Oregon's always going to be about the most difficult standards on the planet to get a mine site through. That's fine. We can handle that. We can get through those things. But this policy option package allows that. My last comment's this. Eventually, this committee is going to have to deal with the LIDAR issue. Eventually, the whole state's going to have a LIDAR done, right? I mean, if you do all of it, you're going to lose that revenue eventually. And the agency's been too reliant on those other funds that came in from LIDAR and some of those other governmental grants. Now, there might be some new ones. But what the RMA believes is that we need to get this agency back to its roots, looking at minerals, helping mining companies come in and develop a resource that will employ Oregonians. And we think that transition needs to start happening, and we're taking small steps. This is just identification. This isn't even permitting yet. This is just continue to do the identification. They put it in their policy option package. The governor didn't agree with it. From the OMA's perspective, we think that that needs to be included in that. I think it's like $389,000, $390,000 or something like that for the biennium, and it'll pick up two people to continue doing that mineral work. So with that, I want to say this just as a last point. We really appreciate the staff of the MLRR program. We think they do a great job. We really appreciate the fact that the new assistant director managing it is thoughtful, honest, accurate. He's got a great style about him. We think he's going to do a very good job in that role. We're excited to see him develop in that. It's a whole new role from being a scientist to a regulator. I mean, it's a whole night and day. But he's thorough and doing a great job. I've had a pleasure of working with the director on multiple issues, and he's also very careful and thoughtful, comes out of the industry side of things way back in his background, and we think he'll do a good job also. So with that, I wanted just to let you know there's some things going on in the agency. You're going to hear some good things and some bad things in this building about this agency, but if we're ever going to have a development of mineral activity in this state, mineral mining, it's going to be from the work that this agency does behind us here, and they're a key to that economic development for rural parts of the state. With that, I know I took way more than I probably should. I'd like to thank Chair Witt and Co-Chair Frederick and the rest of you for listening to my long-ending conversation here.
Thank you very much. Subcommittee members, your questions or comments? Rich, you mentioned the economic potential that mining has for much of eastern Oregon, and I agree with your assessment that there may not be a whole lot of other opportunities outside of mining. If that is true, and we were to move forward, I, with some regularity, run into folks who are concerned about potential environmental disasters, those sorts of things. Could you speak to that?
Chair Witt, I appreciate that. You know, one of the things, from the environmental perspective, Oregon's always going to be careful on how any kind of heavy industry does its business. And we think that's okay. But just to give the committee an idea of what we have to go through from a state, local, and federal perspective to get a mining application through is daunting. Multiple permits. Let me just walk through the Fed's side of it, and I'll be real brief and hit each of them, actually. But on the Fed side, it's not unusual that we have to go through either the Forest Service or the BLM if it's on federal land, and they have significant regulations. If there's an ESA involved, we go through the NEPA analysis, which is quite burdensome, and a biological assessment if there's listed species around there. And for most part around the state, it's pretty hard not to avoid it with all the salmon and things of that nature. From that, we may have to get an Army Corps of Engineers permit for dealing with the fill and removal activities. And with that comes NOAA Fisheries coming in and looking at the biological assessments of whether we're going to have an impact on the fish. We may have some EPA issues depending on the issues associated with whether we're putting a concrete plant or a whatever plant we put up because of the clean air and clean water issues. Then we kick over to the state, and almost every state agency, natural resource agency, has a bite at it. Not only is it DOGAMI, it's Water Resources, it's ODF&W, it's DEQ, and on it goes. And there's each one of those has permits that are associated with certain types of conflicts that may occur from the mining operation. If we get through all of that, then we are over to the county, and we're trying to deal with the land use processes or any other environmental regulations that a county might impose on us, and then we have to get through Oregon's land use system, which we think is onerous, and many times it's arbitrary in how we manage to approve the mining operations. In fact, it's so much so that we think it's the major barrier in the process right now is the land use side. And just real brief on that, we don't have a problem from the mining side handling what known laws are with all those agencies. The problem with the land use system is because we're a sub 2 use in the land use system, which means we have to go through a fully permitted process. I know Representative Hell is smiling at me, so he knows the issue pretty well. But at the very back end of the process, we may not know what the standards or the criteria are that a local government may impose on that mine site until we get towards the end of the process. And it becomes very political, and it's a major problem that we're going to have to deal with, not only from just the general mineral side, but actually supplying aggregates for the transportation. You're going to hear more conversation from the aggregate mining side that your aggregate resources are starting to be exhausted. And there's quite a cost that's associated with moving us from close to the marketplace outward. But with that, it really is daunting. I cannot tell you how significant the applications and how many people work on these things. And it's just not like we do it in a year, the permits out. Most of these are 5 to 10 year processes at a minimum. Some of them, attorneys I know, have spent their entire careers working on the application trying to get these mine sites through. So you'll never hear me say that I don't think that we should be environmentally friendly. It needs to be robust. I'm good with that. But we should only have to get one bite at the apple per conflict and then make the issue done. That would really help. So thank you.
Thank you. And you also mentioned your support of POP 106. What is it specifically that you're after there?
Well, what that does, that POP policy option package does, and I got it right in front of me, it's $394,678. And it completes the database on the mineral inventory work that they started from 3089. And what that database will do is provide it, it'll all be online. The department, after the passage in 2015 of 3089, did an excellent job of going through their existing material and getting that all posted on the website. And I've been through it. I think you might in the Ag Committee have been able to see it and have been shown examples of what they did. This is the next step of completing that database, so it's a fully functional and usable, as I understand it, fully functional and usable database for all of us that may be interested in mineral opportunities in the state. And it could be small, you know, family businesses all the way to the big majors can look at that database and decide if they want to go out and do some exploring. And somebody's got to start providing the information to make it easy for folks to go out and find these things in order to start the process of saying, hey, I think this is valuable. I think I can make a run at it and create a small business. Or if it's big enough, to, like in the case of Paramount, if it's a big enough site, that one of the majors comes in and develops the mine.
Rich, when I questioned the department last week, when they appeared before us, I asked broadly about the potential need for follow-up from the September study, whenever it came out in the fall, and the need to ground truth that, no, maybe not exactly, but at least have a good idea of what our minerals inventory is and where it's located specifically.
Yep.
Their answer, in essence, and I hope I'm being fair to them, and they should feel free to come up and correct me if I'm wrong, was that we need to rely very heavily on the resources of the private sector to assist in that regard. And I'm wondering if you have any recommendations there. And I recognize I may be putting you on the spot, but if I'm hearing the advocacy and everybody's pointing fingers in the opposite direction of where we come up with the money, I'd like to know your ideas on that.
So that's an excellent question, Chair Witt. Essentially what you're saying is, you know, if we're going to start identifying minerals, should the industries have some kind of stake in supporting that? I would agree. We just need to – here's the issue. We don't have anybody yet.
Yeah.
We got one that's got an application in, and so there's nobody to draw on. And I mean, we can go after the real small in-water guys and upland guys, you know, try to draw on them, but that's kind of unfair because they're, even though some of them are small business, a lot of them are recreational. That's not the pot of money you need. This committee should look at this money as an investment to try to get that mineral database so we start getting those folks here. And then we'll have an opportunity of, you know, all the taxes, the employment, and all of that will start coming in. And then we can have a conversation, once we have a few of them here, how to draw in some of their resources in supporting some of this work. But until we actually have a company that's of any kind of size mining in the state, you're asking the aggregate industry's paying for a big share of the MLRR program. So this is an OMA issue. And, you know, it's the same issue OMA has. We're on a shoestring just trying to make it happen. Yeah. Does that help?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I think it validates my concern is that we have a chicken and egg proposition here.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, everybody's looking for an opportunity to have some economic opportunity, and we just can't find the way to pony up.
Well, Chair Witt, one of the things, you know, Dave and I are being pretty strategic, and I'll share this with the committee. We know some things have to be in place first in order to get a viable mining industry growing in Oregon. The first thing is to, for Oregon to say we're open to mining, right? And that's just a daunting issue in of itself. The second thing is try to make it easy, some easy pathways like mineral identification, like some of the permitting issues, like the consolidated permitting process, so that they want to go through. The interesting thing is Dave and I have been around the country going to talking with various mining interests around the state. They literally laugh at Oregon when we suggest that to them that we have minerals and we want you to come. And I mean, they outwardly laugh at us. And they know we have it, but they don't believe that we're going to ever allow anybody to mine it. And so, I mean, there's a lot of complexities to all of that. The next stage, though, after we do this and we make sure that the laws are workable, for the major mining companies is we believe that there needs to be a cost share of the revenues coming out of those mines for the local governments to help get through the permitting processes. So that eventually is going to be one of the bills that we've already talked to AOC about that we think is appropriate to get some money back into the local government process in addition to the employment base. Now, once they're established mines, they're going to be paying fees to the department, and then this legislature could say, you know, we'd like you to do this study, or we think you need to do this to help support that program. And my guess is if Oregon had a viable mining industry and showed interest, that the legislature, the companies would be willing to make those kind of expenditures. So we have a long ways to go, Chair, but that's what I would say, at least answering that question, is it's kind of I get the chicken and the egg analogy.
Thank you very much. Partman would like to come up, please.
Yes. Rich, you mentioned family wage jobs.
Mm-hmm.
What is your interpretation of a family wage job in rural Oregon?
$60,000 probably. I believe these jobs are $50,000, $60,000 a year jobs from what I've been told by the mining companies.
Thank you.
Please.
For the record, my name is Ian Maiden. I'm the Deputy Director of the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries. And Chair Witt, I was just going to try to clarify a little bit our answer the other day about the relative cost or the relative share of expenses between the private sector and government. When you're doing mineral exploration, particularly in an area that doesn't have a lot of a past history, you have to start with some sort of a roadmap. And then as you fill in information and begin to get more and more detailed information, this process sort of narrows down to the point where you're finally sitting on top of 1,000 acres of deposit that you've identified in great detail, and now you're starting to poke holes in it at $50,000 a hole. This whole process is one of increasing resolution and detail of information, mm-hmm. and increasing cost to get at it. And so the point that I was trying to make the other day was that the industry ends up having to bear the majority of that cost because most of it is spent when you get down to that final little evaluation of the property. Where we need to look at putting state resources is way back at the point where we're developing the original roadmap that somebody would use to come in and look at detail and try to find the place where we're spending just enough money to make the industry go, oh, hey, look at that. Here's a new geologic map of this area. It shows rocks that I didn't know were there before that are capable of hosting gold. I'm going to go look there. So that's kind of what we're after, is trying to find that the most cost-effective way to get to that point. And then bring the industry in. Once they start coming and looking and finding things, they're on their own.
Chair Witt, one thing I would just say, it's not just about gold. Oregon has identified chromium deposits, lithium deposits, uranium deposits. We've got talc. We've got limestone deposits, all in the commercial quantities. And so I want to just, you know, let the committee know it isn't just about folks wanting to go out and get gold. There's a lot of stuff that runs our cell phones and other kinds of things that's available in the state that needs to be looked at. So, and I appreciate the comment of Ian on that. I think that's exactly right. It's a 30,000-foot look, and we have the $50,000 holes to drill still.
Well, and if you you like sunstones, we have some pretty awesome sunstones in the state, too, so. Senator Gerard.
Thank you. Rich, this is a question for you. Goal 5 was put into the land use plan to protect aggregate because it is so valuable to our transportation system. I'm hoping, can you share with us the cost to haul? You know,
yeah.
Do you have any figures on that on top of your head?
I do, right on top of my head.
There's not much on the top of your head.
Yeah, I know, thanks. My wife says that too. In fact, we just had a conversation about I'm going down one more notch on the razor, and she's just going to do it as an even buzz now. Chair Witt and Senator Gerard, There's been several studies that have been done on that. One was done by the Department of Geology and Mineral Industries in 1995, and that study suggested that for every 5 miles, there'd be about 25 cents to a buck in additional haul costs. That study was refined in 2006 when Will Jager from OSU did an economic study and determined that, yeah, the cost of transporting is somewhere between 25 and 35 cents per ton mile. But the marginal increase, once you're out past 15, is 22 cents per ton mile. When you think that we're producing somewhere around 36 million tons of aggregate, we believe, the industry believes, from our own internal work, that probably 60% of that or more is used for some infrastructure purpose. And as these mine sites start to dry up, they exhaust. Eventually, they become exhausted. And look at Multnomah County. I think they got one. That's Angel Quarry. Everything from Multnomah County is either coming in from Vancouver or Vancouver, B.C. or Vancouver, Washington, or from Dallasport way up the river. There's an incremental cost, and we believe those incremental costs may be as much as $100 million that it's costing locals and ODOT, somewhere between $50 and $100 million, depending on the assumption. The assumption is this. If it's a 10-mile increase, it's $50 million. If it's a 20-mile increase in haul distance to the job, it's $100 million out of the highway fund to pay for that. It is big-time money, and you can just look around Salem here, and most of the sites are within 5 to 10 years of being exhausted.
I got a
follow-up.
Please. You also talked about the permitting process and how frustrating and how long it's drawn out. Some of us are looking specifically at where feds and state are, they duplicate the same thing. I'll give you an example. ODF&W, state and feds, Corps of Army Engineers and Division of State Lands, EPA and DEQ. Could you just maybe expand on that? Or because I did some development, and that was extremely frustrating for me, and I can't imagine that you would have experienced anything different.
Yeah, that Chair Witt, Senator Girard, that was what I was saying about one robust process. But let's just have one look at it, right? If the feds look at it and go through all the fish-related issues, and we have to deal with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and NOAA Fisheries, maybe the state can make a comment to them and not have to start their own process to go through things. In the world of mining, I think there's a lot of duplication, in my view, and especially if it's on federal land. On the land use side, you know, really the hard part there is we may comply with all the state law, but the local government can set standards greater. And so we know what these are before we start our application process. We may not know what these are until we get towards the end. I mean, they can set a zero dust standard on us that, you know, DEQ is, from their dust standards, doesn't even remotely project. So, yeah, there's a bunch of things within the permitting process that is really frustrating to the industry. And I'll just tell you this, that I can't tell you how many companies in the last 2 weeks have told me they will never try to permit a site in the Willamette Valley. Because if they don't, eventually you're going to have to get your rocks from somewhere to do all the infrastructure you're working on transportation. And I think that's a pretty sad statement, that Ross Island now has to get their material from Davenport, Washington, and for a while Cal Portland was bringing it in from Vancouver, B.C. They do now have a site in that they finally got approved. It was one of those lifetime projects in Columbia County. But I mean, you think about that whole metro area, and we're now supplying aggregates for the metro area from Salem. And, you know, in fairness to the farmers out here that don't like us here, because those locales aren't handling their own rock demand. It's coming from somewhere else, putting pressure on other farmland, and it just keeps getting pushed further and further out with greater and greater costs. And the state, it's a problem for the state, and you're paying for it. It's a hidden cost. And I've been doing some work on it to start to highlight that. And at some point, we're going to be walking into the legislature saying, look, we had a disaster. You're going to have to do something. And you know, anyway, talking a little bit off the top of my head, and I'm sure with the Farm Bureau right behind me, I'm kind of wondering how much further I should go.
Are there any other questions? I apologize. I had two other bills that I was chief sponsor on, so I sort of have to be there for you. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Are there any other folks who are planning on speaking for public testimony on this? No? Well, that was timing on my part, wasn't it? sorry. Well, I guess we will close this this hearing, public hearing, HB 5011. And we will be starting tomorrow talking about the Department of Environmental Quality. So bring your questions, and no arrows, but bring your questions. And see, yes, do you have, yes.
Chair ahead. Frederick, members of the committee, just wanted to point out there is a work session tomorrow on two grants, a DLCD grant and an OWEB grant. You can find the materials for that on OLIS already. And then, of course, it's the first day of public hearing for Department of Environmental Quality. And then I just wanted to point out real quick that we did have two public testimony submittals that are also on OLIS from the Association of Oregon Counties and the League of Women Voters. You can find those on there.
And regarding the DEQ testimony, we expect that the department will be testifying from on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and likely have public testimony on Monday. So expect that. But we'll see how quickly they go. I mentioned to the department exec that we expected him to give a somewhat long-winded, but we'll see what happens. So thank you very much, and we'll close the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources for today. Thank you. Thank you. Committee on Natural Resources for today.